FM.
On DCFM.
1,000 years after the death of Christ, money changers, those who loan out and manipulate the quantity of money, were active in medieval England. In fact, they were so active that acting together, they could manipulate the entire English economy. These were not bankers per se. The money changers generally were the goldsmiths. They were the first bankers because they started keeping other people's gold for safekeeping in their vaults. The first paper money was merely a receipt for gold left at the goldsmith. Paper money caught on because it was more convenient than carrying around a lot of heavy gold and silver coins. Eventually, goldsmiths noticed that only a small fraction of the depositors ever came in and demanded their gold at any one time. Goldsmiths started cheating on the system. They discovered that they could print more money than they had gold, and usually no one would be the wiser.
Then they could loan out this extra money and collect interest on it. This was the birth of fractional reserve banking, that is, loaning out many times more money than you have assets on deposit. So, if $1,000 in gold were deposited with them, they could loan out about $10,000 in paper money and draw interest payments on it, and no one would ever discover the deception.
Welcome back to BCFM's Politics Show with old Labour Oxford economist Martin Summers and me, Tony Gosling. A Russian military transport plane down over the hotly contested Black Sea. On board, the Russian army's finest singers, due to boost morale on Christmas Day. So, did the TU-154 fall, or was it pushed into the drink with nearly 100 passengers and crew? Also, Obama expels 35 Russian diplomats because Putin personally supervised the hacking of Hillary Clinton's emails, if you believe that. Putin's response is, fine, I'm not going in for this tit-for-tat game. Is Putin weak or just being sensible? Plus, the latest John Pilger film, The Coming War on China. It was on ITV earlier this month. What did it reveal about the United States surrounding China with military bases? Also, our sister show Dialects on Noon every Tuesday this week. It'll be in the courts in January. Mayor Ferguson set it up, but will Marvin Rees tear it down? Bristol City Council are housing people in their own property and outsourcing to a firm called Camelot. But Camelot just happen to be the worst landlords in the country, and those living under them get no proper tenants' rights at all. We hear from one of them, Nick Connor. Also from Holland, British journalist Tony Sheldon's written a book about the Battle of Arnhem. But the civilian, the more human side, what was it like for the Dutch to believe in September 1944 they'd been liberated by British paratroopers, only to find out the Nazis were back with a vengeance? That's Dialect at noon next Tuesday. First, I'm joined on the line by former Professor James Tracy, who runs something called the Memory Hole blog in the United States. Hi, James, and welcome to the Politics Show.
Hi, happy to be here.
Now, James, can you just tell us a little bit about, you were working at a university in Florida, and what happened to you there? Because I know right about a year ago was the time of the Sandy Hook attack.
Well, the Sandy Hook event took place in December of 2012. A year ago would have been the third anniversary, and this year being the fourth anniversary, but it was about 1 year ago now that I was terminated from my tenured faculty position at Ford Atlantic University, allegedly for not filing paperwork on time, which is a really ridiculous thing for any tenured faculty member to be fired for, but that was the case with me, and now we have filed, with the help of a number of attorneys here in South Florida, and we filed a civil rights lawsuit alleging that my First and 14th Amendments have been violated. The First and 14th Amendments, rather, have been violated during the firing, and that the real cause of the firing had to do with the university administration's disagreements and dislike of the content on my personal blog.
Tell us what you had discovered about Sandy Hook, and what were you pointing out about it? Because, I mean, we on this program regularly say, well, actually, the mainstream media really isn't getting to grips with these terrorist attacks. What they're happening is that they're happening week after week, and they barely get to grips with one of them until the next one comes along. In fact, a lot of the time, you end up with the completely wrong impression about what's going on. So tell us a bit about what really happened at Sandy Hook.
Well, I think that it's of special significance to those of you in the U.K., because I have argued at various points and observed that Sandy Hook, the event itself, was likely modeled on the 1995 shooting in Dunblane, Scotland, which was very similar, and there were a like number of unanswered questions in that event. But as you may recall, that event led to a ban throughout the UK of handguns, semi-automatic handguns. And it really was not ever delved into to any significant degree. There were never autopsies of the children performed, and there were many, many unanswered questions. And I came across that information and looked at the Dunblane event more closely after Sandy Hook. And then, of course, if you may recall, 6 weeks after Dunblane, the Port Arthur massacre took place in Australia, in Tanzania. And that led to similar gun control measures throughout Australia. And so this has quite a history. It goes back, you know, at least a few decades, I would argue even more so, because it's a very complex event. But one has to look at those two events, the ways in which they've been presented by the government and media alike, in order, I think, to help understand what was going on with Sandy Hook, which I believe was an event, whether or not it was partially real, partially unreal, whether or not there were elements of it that were real, or whether it may have been entirely a FEMA drill, the end result was to push through gun control legislation in the United States. And that's been my observation from the get-go. And it's not a matter of being conservative, liberal, progressive, you know, right-wing. It's simply a cold, hard fact that the Obama administration had won the victory. They won a second term in office in November of 2012. The Democrats had a majority in Congress, and they wanted to have an event, I believe, that would be tremendously dramatic and would cause a wide degree of popular support for gun control.
Okay, so James, 20 children were shot, at least that's what we're told. Is there anything that you point to that you would say, evidence that you would like to tell us and our listeners that hasn't really been related by the mainstream media about what happened at Sandy Hook? Of course, it was 4 years ago, pretty much 4 years ago, in Newton in Connecticut, a 20-year-old guy called Adam Lanza apparently fatally shot these 20 children at a school. Now, you know, I want to know, what is it that you've seen about this attack that makes you think that maybe it, the evidence that it wasn't what we're told it was?
Well, initially, it was not only myself, but really hundreds of researchers online on YouTube and their own blogs who are really delving into this event. Available public records, the existing reportage of the event from the mainstream media here, and a lot of things didn't add up. And that was my initial argument. I never came out and said, oh, it was a hoax, this thing didn't happen. I argued that at the time that the event did not happen, did likely not happen as it was reported to us. And I've maintained that position, years since the event took place.
Well, can you point to something specific, James, that you have found maybe that was reported in the mainstream that wasn't true, or events which were true that weren't reported?
Well, some of the first things that I observed include the individual who was chased up into the woods and was apprehended by the police, and yet he was put in the front of the patrol car in the aftermath of this incident. And what that suggested to me was that there may have been one or more drills taking place that were being presented by government agencies and the media as authentic events, and that they were not, in fact, events. And I think that that's something important. Oh, they're not real events, and I think that's something important to keep in mind with regard to the Sam's Club events, some of the ones that you alluded to earlier on in our discussion. We really have to, when we see an event reported, we have to first probably doubt that we have to doubt its authenticity and question the extent to which we can actually believe the fake news media, the corporate and government news media, versus the alternative news outlets that are actually providing worthwhile reportage and analysis. So that was one thing, the individual being placed in the front of the police car, which would suggest that this individual was an undercover police officer himself. If he was an actual suspect, he would have been put in the back of the police car. So there are many of these things that I pointed to very early on, as well as other researchers. Another one involved the testimony, or the press conference that was held on December 15th of H. Wayne Carver, who is Connecticut's state coroner, who was there doing the autopsies of bodies that allegedly were kept in the school for over 12 hours, like 16, 18 hours, and taken out in the middle of the night. This is completely abandoned standard protocol for how emergencies are treated. And it's very unusual as well that parents, 20 parents or 30 parents, 20 sets of parents, would actually stand for their child's body being treated in such a dishonorable fashion following such a violent incident. And yet that is what we are asked, or I think requested to believe by our government and by the media.
Now, you run something called the Memory Hole blog, which is an excellent resource, James. Can you just give us some other examples of things, stories that you think we should be reminded of? Because quite often, very important stories just get maybe one little blip in the news and suddenly they disappear, even though they're giving us a massive insight into the way things really work. So can you just pick out a couple of stories that you've written about on your blog where you think that we should remember these rather than forget about them like the mainstream press seem to want?
Well, the whole idea of Memory Hole blog was in the spirit of Orwell and Orwell's 1984 was to try to preserve true analysis of these events as they take place and following their having occurred. And another event that is, I think, of tremendous significance is the Boston Marathon bombing that took place over here in the U.S. Now, there are also many events that have taken place over in Europe that we may not have been able to touch upon yet, but I think the Boston Marathon bombing is significant. That was even more blatant in terms of it being something that was contrived because it took place outdoors. It was largely, the coverage of it was largely monopolized between the Boston Globe and the New York Times, a handful of broadcast outlets. And there are all sorts of anomalies that we could point to whereby that was most likely a drill. And that's something that, of course, also involved foreign policy. It was not solely involve domestic gun control measures and the like, but I provided a good deal of commentary and analysis on that too, with memory hole bad. Subsequent to that, I was a bit more careful in terms of really commenting. It was primarily a matter of presenting news stories, putting a post up, and having my commenters themselves come in and do some of the analysis, provide some of the color, additional links and things like that to other sites, rather than me doing the analysis solely. And I did that in part because of the way in which I had been attacked in mainstream media as being this conspiracy theorist. And that couldn't be further from the truth. I'm afraid that a lot of the conspiracy theorists are those that lead our governments and are involved regard themselves as being serious journalists. Those that are the conspiracy analysts are in the alternative media, such as yourself and what you do and other alternative outlets. They are the real journalists today.
Okay, look, James, I'm going to pin you down on Boston. What facts would you like to point to do with Boston that most people will not have heard of?
Well, the wealth of photographs that were taken by two photographers separately of the incident itself, and those are available online, that they indicate that this was something that was, the event itself was something that was carried out by crisis actors rather than being the actual event. The way that it was presented as a narrative in the mainstream media, with these various testimonies to bloodshed and gore, is quite different from what is actually documented in those photographs that indicate that it was an event that was a drill that was embellished by actors, extras, and there was again a complete abandonment of emergency protocol at the event. Where you did not, there was no indication that over 150 people were injured at that event, that three people died, and yet that is how it was designed and presented in the major media.
I mean, it's quite a big allegation to say that you've got crisis actors involved. Martin Summers, can you give us an idea, what is a crisis actor and what is James talking about here?
Well, my understanding of the Boston incidents is that there was, in fact, a drill going on. This is usual in these kind of incidents, which then flips over to become live. So you've got crisis actors there who are pretending to be part of the attack. We've also got video footage, photographs that have been independently taken, because people carry phones and stuff around with them these days, that showed that the backpack that was carried by Tsarnaev was a different colour from the backpack that was lost, and that there was a group from Kraft, who are a military company contracted to the US government, who were all there at the time. And I think, given what we know about NATO intelligence services operations in this country, the US and other countries, it should be normal practice to question whether what we're being told about an incident is correct. For example, the recent attack in Berlin, the guy had been under observation for a long time. They found his ID document in the cab. I just don't believe stuff like that. And it's perfectly reasonable to question whether we're being told the truth by intelligence agencies like the FBI, CIA, etc. Their trade is treachery.
Now, we were told, weren't we, that the Tsarnaev brothers were behind the Boston bombings, but Dzhokhar Tsarnaev, he was photographed after having been arrested by the police in Boston, and he'd been stripped down, I think, to his underwear. He was just being put into a car, and yet we were told that there, afterwards, that his body had been blown to bits because he'd been involved in a shootout after he'd been arrested. I mean, this kind of stuff didn't seem to get reported much. But anyway, look, back to you. I'm just going to give the final word to you, James. What lessons have you learned over the years about the way the media works that you'd like to share with us?
Well, I've learned that the major media and academia, the universities, generally work in defense of government narratives, or they are there to promote government narratives. And we cannot rely on them for real news. They are the true disseminators of fake news.
Why is that? Why? Why, though?
I think for fear of their careers, journalists and academics have to toe the line. And I learned that quite profoundly, and I was terminated from my position 1 year ago that's what I'm attempting to contest through this lawsuit, and that my civil rights have been violated. And I really do think that more journalists, more professional intellectuals, if you will, do actually need to take a stand and to be become whistleblowers and explain to their publics, to their constituencies, that what they're being asked to uphold or to report on in many cases are not true or are not what they're representing them as being.
Yeah, what we're not getting is the proper analysis that used to happen here in Britain on television in the 1980s and early 1990s, for example, which is, you know, you get a whole kind of hour-long documentary on something a couple of weeks after it's happened, which actually goes, digs below the news headlines. But look, I mean, we had on a few weeks ago a chap called Professor Anthony Hall from Calgary in Canada, with a very similar story. Tenured professors speaking out against the system that then find themselves, James, without a job.
That's right. Yeah, I have been in touch with Anthony Hall, and there are a number, at least a dozen similarities between his case and my case, in that we were both targeted in smear campaigns, and these smear campaigns contributed to the pressure that was placed upon our administrations, our university administrations, to terminate us or suspend us. He was suspended without pay, which is in many ways the equivalent of being terminated, and his faculty union has actually come to his defense, and I believe they've filed a grievance. I'm not sure what the present status of the case is, but there are a number of similarities definitely between his case and mine.
Okay, well, what was the situation with you? Who was actually running the smear campaign against you, James?
These individuals that I think are aligned with the media, individuals who assert they are parents of the Sandy Hook massacre victims, they wrote an very inflammatory op-ed in the local regional newspaper here that was published and contributed to a tremendous amount of pressure that was placed upon the university administration to terminate me, and they did it a few days after that letter was, in fact, published. When they could have, in fact, come out and said, well, this is a matter of free speech, of academic freedom, and we are going to stand pat, the severity of the punishment, the discipline involving termination, and not even for what they alleged that I didn't fill out these papers for outside activities, and that therefore that was the reason, that was the cause for the discipline of termination. It's much more involved than that, but instead of actually coming out and saying that it was for my speech that they did not agree with, they sought to use this ruse in order to fire me. And it's somewhat similar as to what happened to Anthony Hall. Of course, something was posted on his Facebook page, and that was likewise inflammatory, but specifically anti-Semitic, and a number of pressure groups contacted the University of Lethbridge administration, and that led to his suspension without pay.
So what do you think is the agenda behind all this, finally?
I think it is to keep academics, to keep professors, to keep salaried intellectuals in line. And generally that is done simply through fear. But when you have individuals such as Dr. Hall or myself who do go out and have a public presence and question things such as these mass casualty events or the policies of Israel against the Palestinian people, there has to be this there's this process that is put into play, and we are dealing with, certainly Anthony Hall is dealing with, one of the most powerful lobbying organizations or matrixes, if you will, in North America, and that is the Israeli lobby, the Jewish American lobby, which consists of various organizations, all very well funded, And even if what they have to say is patently false, nevertheless, the university administrations or the management of journalistic outlets go right along with them. It's quite frightening. And that, in a way, is what happened to me, but it was a little bit more complex than that. But it also involved letter and email campaigns to the administration of my university, harassment of me as well. That continues to this day in terms of Memory Hole blog, which was kicked off a number of servers because of these complaints by these trolls who are involved really in cyber stalking me. It involves other sorts of harassment that I've experienced of late. But to deprive someone of their livelihood simply because of what they say in the public realm is really quite severe.
Now, you're doing the right thing, James. You're fighting back. You're going through the courts. How can people follow what's going on and maybe contribute, if they feel like it, to your court case costs?
They can go to TracyLegalDefense.org. That's TracyLegalDefense.org. And you can find out more about the case there. We also have a copy of the amended complaint that's available on PDF on that site, and there's an address where you can also contribute and find out more information, and you can also contact me via that website, and you can link to that website from memoryholeblog.com. You can go there directly to TracyLegalDefense.org.
Now, look, I keep saying final, but I'm going to say finally again. Well, what do you make of this new administration? Do you think there's going to be any real changes when Trump takes over in a few weeks?
I think anything will be an improvement. I think a lot of us are so sick and tired of the nonsense and the lies of the Obama administration, and the fact that the Obama administration has really taken the mantle, the legacy of the civil rights movement in the United States, which inherently has a great deal of good in it, and has just, I think, sold it and cheapened it for other political designs that have really nothing to do with civil rights. And so I think that Trump, certainly with regard to foreign policy, will be an improvement. He wishes to go ahead and extend an olive branch to Russia, and I think that that's a good sign. So, overall, I'm not sure. It's really too early to tell, but I would like to think that Trump and his administration, but Trump in particular, is sincere in what he has to say, and in many ways it is a breath of fresh air versus what, again, we've experienced over the past several years.
Amazing. A Trump of fresh air. Anyway, look, fingers crossed for the world. Let's hope it all works out. And we, Britain, I suppose, we're kind of part of the American Empire, really, aren't we? We're kind of sitting in amongst it, like the old Roman Empire. But anyway, James Tracy, former professor from Florida, booted out for his views. Thanks very much for joining us on The Politics Show.
Okay, thank you, Tony.
Getting bigger by being better. The number one choice for Bristol. This is BCFM 93.2.
Martin, I think we'll just pick up on some of the stuff that we were chatting around there. What's your view about Trump? We had a little clip from him last week talking about the September the 11th attacks, saying he thought there were explosives involved in bringing down the World Trade Center, or at least to getting the planes couldn't have done it on their own.
Well, I think there are possibilities in the situation. There always are. That would have been true if Clinton had won, or Bernie Sanders, who might have won had he not had the nomination stolen from him by Clinton. But what I'd like to say to all of our American friends is I have no faith in your political system at all. It's not a question of who's in charge.
Do you have any faith in our political system?
No, I don't. In actual fact, what people have got to recognise is that the deep state in the United States and the deep state in Britain is far more powerful than individual politicians. And if you look to individual politicians to rescue you, you will be disappointed. Not because they're all bad. Some of them are quite good. But they're not going to have any power because the power is actually elsewhere. And we go through the rigmarole of pretending to vote for people who are supposedly running the country. And in actual fact, it's all run from behind the scenes by people who are just using all of this as a facade in any case.
a Tu-154 jet military transport plane carrying a Russian army choir, amongst a few other people, down to Syria from Russia, stopped off at Sochi on the early morning of Christmas Day and went into the sea, Martin.
Yeah, I'm aware of this. I understand that the Russian positions are so far is that they don't suspect any foul play. Incidentally, I was on Russia Today earlier this week talking about this. Exactly the same plane was used. It was a Russian-built plane.
Tu-154, yeah.
Which, of course, the Polish national leadership, military leadership, political leadership, intelligence leadership were on a similar plane flying to Katyn some years ago, and that crashed. And now, of course, the Poles are saying that the Russians are something to hide about it and so on and so forth. I think, in actual fact, these planes have a pretty poor reputation and are quite old. And therefore, in both cases, the first prima facie evidence, and don't forget, we're conspiracy theorists, but in both cases, I would suggest that these planes do crash. In the Polish case, the flying conditions were abysmal. You don't really need an explanation about why a plane crashes in those conditions.
One of the things
flown badly.
One of the things I'd point out is immediately, literally within an hour or so, the Russian authorities at Sochi had released the audio of air traffic control, so you could hear all of the discussions between the plane and the control tower at Sochi,
yeah.
All the way from when the plane switched its engines on to when it disappeared. Also pointing out that that wasn't the case with the MH17 that crashed in Ukraine, was it?
Well, indeed. So, in other words, the Russians
haven't released them.
To be transparent. It reminds me when I was flying back from Armenia many years ago, and we stopped at Sochi. On Armenian Airways, yes. And they had to negotiate where they were going to stop, and eventually it was agreed that they would stop at Sochi. They had to hand over various... they had to barter at that stage. This is when the Soviet Union was collapsing, so they bartered. They had loads of stuff that they gave them, like eggs and chickens and things, so that we could stop at Sochi. And then they came to refuel the plane, and the guy who was refueling the plane was smoking a fag as he was refueling the plane, and there was a fire engine standing by.
Oh,
but we were just laughing that maybe there was a fire engine had no water on it.
Look,
whatever.
Okay,
but
let me just correct you technically, because I know they're not supposed to smoke, but actually Avtur, which is used to fuel jet aircraft, is pretty much like paraffin. So if you were to stub a cigarette out in it, it would just go...
Yeah, but it doesn't inspire confidence in the passengers, does it?
So you had to actually barter for your fuel.
Well, we didn't. The Armenian Airways had to, because there was only one flight a week from Armenia to Paris. And then we spent nearly 20 hours in the airport in Yerevan waiting for Armenian Airways to negotiate where they were going to stop for a fuel stopover. And, you know, lots of people saying, "Niet, you're not coming here," you know. And eventually they did manage to negotiate with Sochi that we would get refueled there. That was an era when the Russian infrastructure was collapsing as a result of the economic reforms which the West had imposed on Russia, and I imagine that things are much better there today. In fact, I know they are.
Okay, I mean, I actually was discussing this on Twitter during the week, and lo and behold, who should pop up on Twitter commenting about it? It was a Twitter account called Air Controller, which is at ATCUKR, which is the official Twitter account for the air traffic control in Kiev.
Well, I mean, they've got questions to answer about what happened with MH17.
Well, what they're
they?
Saying is that Ukraine is not hiding anything. The tapes and the radar data were transferred to the Dutch Safety Board, and also that they hide all evidence in MH17. No, sorry, this is... Then somebody else weighed in saying something else on Twitter, and I got a most unbelievable response from the official Twitter account at Kiev, which said, "Both you guys can bleep F each other whilst listening to the Soviet anthem. Good luck." That was from the official account of Twitter.
Well, that just shows how well disposed they are and how willing to discuss the truth they are. The Dutch Safety Board hasn't released any of this if they did hand it over, because a deal has been done between...
It's called a non-disclosure agreement, because there's a criminal investigation, yeah. And all of the parties, including Malaysia, Australia, everybody, have to agree, and the Dutch have to agree if anything is going to be disclosed.
And Kiev, the Ukrainian regime, is part of that investigation
That's right.
team. Now, you might argue it's either Kiev or Russia that shot down the plane, so neither of them should be on the investigation. But Kiev has got a veto over any of the others saying anything about it. And in actual fact, the suspicion that I have is that the plane was shot down by a fighter from Kiev, and BBC Russia actually reported eyewitness accounts in the next day from people on the ground saying they'd seen it shot down by a plane, which then disappeared.
With Kiev,
even though they're out there.
Kiev's official air traffic control Twitter account, using four-letter words, unprovoked, I would suggest nobody should fly over Ukraine. From my background in aviation, do not fly over Ukraine, folks, because you're basically in the hand of people who will just... I mean, I don't know who these people are, but they certainly should be running an air traffic
control exactly.
system.
Well, exactly. I mean, and the fact that they're using four-letter words on Twitter to defend themselves suggests what kind of people they are. That's not how air traffic control...
Actually, they're not actually defending themselves. They're just trolling us.
See, we can sing the Soviet anthem with the capsits, as they call them.
Yeah, we can F each other whilst listening to the Soviet anthem. That's what they actually said. Unbelievable.
You know what happens with that? We're going to broadcast that to the world, and if they think they're going to win by using that kind of tactic, they are deluded. And in actual fact, they've lost the war, and they're not going to win it by doing stuff like that.
Okay, also, Erdogan is saying that the United States has definitely been supporting ISIS, and he's been producing evidence to show it.
Yes, and of course there's lots of evidence produced by the Russians to show that Bilal Erdogan, his son, was supporting ISIS as well. In actual fact, they're both right. Both Turkey and the US have been supporting ISIS whilst pretending to fight them. And I think it's fascinating that these people are now throwing all this mud at each other, because it just begins to show. It's like using F words on Twitter, isn't it? They're all rattled. They don't really know what to say, because of course they have been supporting ISIS, as the DIA report by Michael Flynn, who's now head of defence for Trump, said at the time. We mentioned earlier about Donald Trump pointing out there were probably bombs in the building on 9/11, and you feel like saying, yes, Donald, and that means it couldn't possibly have been Al-Qaeda working from caves in Afghanistan. It must have been an inside job. Who are you going to start arresting?
But surely,
your pals,
surely
your
bin
pals
Laden,
in the CIA?
Surely bin Laden could have planted bombs in the World Trade Center. He sent one of his agents?
Well, no. If you think about it, the bombs in the World Trade Center and WTC-7, they must have been, it takes at least, 24 hours, 48 hours to plant bombs of that sort. You can't just leave a bag. You're talking about bombs which are going to demolish buildings. You require it can't be done. I mean, how did these Al-Qaeda guys do that? If bombs were used, as Trump suggested, then it cannot possibly be an Al-Qaeda hit. Al-Qaeda can be involved in the hit, because Al-Qaeda is actually a front organization for Western intelligence services. But the actual bombing was carried out by mechanics, technicians who were working for the Western intelligence services.
One of the journalists that takes some credit for getting Donald Trump elected is someone called Alex Jones, runs a website called Infowars.com, works with a British guy called Paul Joseph Watson as well. That's a regular, that's been actually going, I can remember when I first saw it in the mid-1990s, popped up on the internet. I thought, this is extremely professional. Well, you wonder what's happening with them now, because they're now saying this week 10 times that God has hit America with a major disaster after the United States attempts to divide the land of Israel, because Barack Obama has cursed Israel at the United Nations. America is now under a curse. That's Boxing Day on Infowars.com, the Alex Jones site.
Well, the rumour out there is that Alex Jones is a Mossad agent, even though, of course, he's also a 9/11 truther and a major supporter of Trump.
Well, he seems to have forgotten all about that.
Actually. Oh, well, I mean, but it's all on the record, isn't it? I mean, he was in the BBC Conspiracy Files film going on about how 9/11 was in. He's become a very influential character, because Trump phoned him up the day he won the election and said, thank you, Alex, for supporting me. But Alex Jones is a 9/11 truther, as we are. He believes that 9/11 was an inside job. But we also...
So why is he coming out with this stuff about America being under a curse because of what Barack Obama has done at the United Nations, criticising the Israeli settlement programme?
He's always had loads of resources compared to other alternative media, and the suspicion is that he's a limited hangout.
What do you make of this UN vote as well? It's quite important. It may be... certainly the way I'm looking at it is that the US and Britain have actually backed it, or even not backed it, if you can say that, because actually the Obama administration is coming to the end anyway, so it won't really make any difference.
Yeah, well, I think the suspicion in Israel is that Britain had a big hand in this, because and was also they also linked it to Theresa May's anti-Semitic definition thing. So it was a kind of
the New Zealanders maneuver. As well, and actually the Israelis have withdrawn ambassadors from countries that back the resolution, haven't they?
They have, but I mean, as we've often said on this show, there's a real question whether Israel should be in the United Nations at all. Kosovo isn't, Crimea isn't, Kashmir isn't. And Israel is smaller than all of those countries, effectively. Why are they there? Especially if they're not going to play by the rules.
Well, I think you're being anti-Semitic, don't
you? No, it's a perfectly legitimate... When I say that Crimea shouldn't be represented in the United Nations, am I being anti-Russian? No. I'm just taking a political position, like Theresa May and others. There's no right, automatically, to be represented at the United Nations. Israel was only recognised as a state in 1948 on the understanding that it would remain within its existing borders and that those who had been displaced would be able to return.
Also,
they've never fulfilled those obligations, therefore they ought to lose their seat at the United Nations.
Also, 2017 doesn't look like being a good year for Benjamin Netanyahu, or Bibi, as he's affectionately known, which means Israel would probably lash out wildly. Maybe, who knows? But anyway, Netanyahu is going to be investigated now for fraud and bribery. The police are turning a month-long secret inquiry into a full-blown investigation after a raid on Christmas Day at the Israeli Defense Ministry. A month-long inquiry into Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's affairs took a new twist, with police convinced they will be able to open a full-blown criminal investigation against him in the next few days. They received new documents as part of a secret inquiry began almost 9 months ago, and those false police have already turned into Attorney General Avshai Mandelblit, recommending to allow them to open a full criminal investigation. This is into corruption and bribery by Benjamin Netanyahu.
Well, if you were to say to me that there is corruption and bribery in Israeli politics, I would be shocked, because as we all know, there's no corruption and bribery in Israeli politics, British politics or American politics. They're all absolutely above board, and there's nothing to see here, folks.
Also, NATO terrorism auditor Yves Chandelon was suicided. That is what some people are saying. Certainly he was found dead. The chief auditor of NATO, Yves Chandelon, in Brussels. He's the in charge of counter-terrorism funding. Was reportedly found dead in the city of Anden in the Belgian Ardennes last Friday, a single gunshot wound to the head.
Yes, and the family have pointed out that the gun in his hand was in the wrong hand, because he was left-handed or right-handed, and it wasn't one that, and he owned three guns, and it wasn't one of the three he owned. And in other words, the family are questioning whether this is real. And if you think about it, if you're an auditor for NATO, and NATO are involved, for example, in orchestrating something like the Berlin attack, and they may well have been, then you might be collateral damage.
Some people have pointed out in Belgium, Martin, some people have pointed out in Belgium that he had three registered guns, but the shot came from a fourth gun, which had been kept in the glove compartment of the car. Family doesn't believe it's a suicide. Also, a friend of the dead man says that he believes believe the thesis of suicide. It remains to be determined whether or not the dead... I mean, the main thing, Martin, about all this, you could go on and on about it all day, is we haven't had this reported. One of the chief financial people at the heart of NATO is found dead in very suspicious circumstances. No report whatsoever on the mainstream press.
Well, probably better reported in Belgium than it is here. But
well, it's in the local press in Belgium, in the Ardennes region.
Well, exactly. This is the way that modern psychological warfare operates, and it's the only thing we've got. Local press will report something, but it won't be reported by bigger press. So, for example, it was the Bergen Record that first reported about the five dancing Israelis on 9/11, and that was the only place it was ever reported, apart from in the alternative media. And of course, a lot of fake news, if we can use that fake phrase, is a mission as well as commission. By not reporting things, you give people a distorted view of the way the world works.
And we just heard from James Tracy how a lot of journalists are worried that they don't want to lose their jobs, and so they
or end
say
up
what
suicided.
They're told to say. Also, talking of fake news, we've had a new load of money set up and granted in In the United States, a whole new department set up to win the propaganda war, they say, against RT, Russia Today, the channel that you are on, etc. And fake news we hear this week, Germany is to set up a Ministry of Truth ahead of the 2017 elections. German Interior Ministry has announced its intention to combat so-called fake news on social media by setting up a defence, what they call a defence centre against disinformation. Interior Minister Thomas de Maizière has expressed concern over what the government deems to be fake news ahead of the federal election. The ministry has made what some may consider to be an Orwellian proposal to counter the issues.
Well, don't forget, here in Britain, we have Brigade 77, the 77th Brigade. And you wonder why it's called the 77th
Brigade. Well, maybe it's to do with 7-7.
Well, maybe it is. Maybe
bombings.
These people have got a sense of humour. But it employs 1,000 British Army officers. Officers, they're all officers, and that means that we must be on a minimum 30 grand salaries, even for the operatives. And there's 1,000 of them, and they spend all of their time intervening on social media to spin the government's lie.
They may say they're getting paid less than 30,000, and they may be being poached by the private sector.
Well, I'm just saying, if the British Army officers, they've got to be at least second lieutenants, and no doubt there are plenty of majors and colonels in there. In other words, it's a very expensive operation. Full time. I mean, you know, a normal battalion has 1,000 guys in it, but they're you know, many of them are on small salaries.
Okay.
There's an awful lot of money. But these people are anonymous, and they spend all of their time going on social media, not saying who they are, pushing the British government's line about things like Aleppo, fake news, whatever. So then people think that they're hearing independent stuff. They're not. The Brigade 77 is out there lying away every day.
What the police were doing,
taxpayer expense.
What the police were doing, we found out with the Spy Cops story, was they were actually taking the identities of dead people, incredibly. But anyway, look, while we're still talking about fake news, Facebook fact checker, who will arbitrate on fake news, has been defrauding a website to pay for prostitutes, and its staff includes an escort, porn star, and a vice vixen dom. Now, you can guess this is from the Daily Mail, this one. Facebook's announced plans to check for fake news using a series of organisations to assess whether stories are true. One of them is a website called Snopes.com, which claims to be one of the web's essential resources and painstaking, scholarly, and reliable. It was founded by husband and wife Barbara and David Mickelson, who used a letterhead claiming they were a non-existent society to start their research. Now they're divorced, with Barbara claiming in legal documents he embezzled $98,000 of company money and spent it on himself and prostitutes. And these are the people who apparently are now going to be arbitrating on whether something's fake news or not.
Well, what we've got to do is, whenever anything happens, like the Kiev air traffic control starts using F words, or they start saying we are going to start saying what's fake news or not, we're going to look into your waste paper baskets. We're going to follow you around. We're going to find out what you eat for breakfast, as Michael Collins famously says in the film Michael Collins. And you know, two can play at that game. And I think I'll just let me remind people again about Brigade 77, only set up 18 months ago. 1,000 British Army officers spending 100% of their time online making stuff up, or they would say combating fake news from RT. In other words, I get paid 50 quid a pop to go on RT and say my piece. They're being paid a hell of a lot more than that to say I'm talking rubbish. But who's right? Well, let the masses decide.
Every now and again, we have to say this, don't we? Don't believe, folks, what you hear on this show.
Absolutely not.
Go and check it up yourself. We always do a whole load of information for you on the internet, where you can look up the stories, links to the stories that we're covering on thisweek.org.uk. If you like what you see, you can leave a comment. If you don't, you can complain on there too. Put a comment at thisweek.org.uk.
And do pick us up when we get things factually wrong.
Yeah, it's always helpful.
We're more than happy to be told we're wrong if we are wrong.
As we do corrections from time to time, and if we've got anything wrong this week and you point it out, we will correct it next week. Not like the Sun do on a little tiny weeny line. We will say it just like it is. Former UK ambassador to Syria has accused the Foreign Office of lying about the country's civil war. This is Peter Ford, Martin. The ex-British ambassador to Syria has accused the Foreign Office of lying over the country's civil war, said the British policy there was made the situation worse. And, of course, now we've got a ceasefire for the first time for 3 or 4 years. It looks like it may hold.
Yes, but don't forget, one of the things that Obama did on his way out was to give full permission to hand over both anti-aircraft and anti-tank weaponry to rebels in Syria. which gives the and the British Army, of course, has also deployed people to Turkey to debrief rebels being taken out of eastern Aleppo to see what they can do to get them back in the fight. And it's been suggested that the assassination of Karlov, the Russian ambassador, is in order to try and frustrate the rapprochement between Turkey and Russia, and that the British and possibly the Israelis were involved in it. I don't know.
Also, a new book out, Debriefing the President, The Interrogation of Saddam Hussein by John Nixon, is published December the 29th, that's yesterday, by Bantam Press at £17. What he says, he grilled John Nixon, did the ruthless dictator of Iraq, Saddam Hussein. In the course of the interrogation, Saddam turned our assumptions upside down. The book is called Debriefing the President, Martin. He says actually that Saddam Hussein himself, there was a lot of misconceptions, and also that he was a bit concerned that maybe Saddam knew things which actually may have helped prosecute people like Blair.
Well, that's why he was put on trial in Iraq. If he'd been put on trial at the International Criminal Court at The Hague, he'll have said, well, actually, I used to work with British intelligence, American intelligence and Israeli intelligence. Call my handlers. That's why he was put on trial in Iraq, so none of that would be brought into the mix.
It was December the 13th, 2003, he says, and I'd been in Iraq for 8 weeks, a CIA analyst looking for leads that might take us to Saddam and his notorious henchmen. That was when I called to see Buzzy Krongard, the CIA's executive director there. The war to topple the regime had been going on for nearly 9 months, yet when it came to Saddam, all we turned up were Elvis sightings, as we called them, until, that is, the troops searching down a farm near Saddam's hometown found a large bearded man concealed in a tiny underground bunker. They were concerned that it wasn't really him. But who's this Buzzy Krongard guy?
Well, we know him because he was named as the beneficiary of the 9/11 attacks, because Rupert, who was the CIA, cop versus CIA.com from the wilderness, he was involved in the investigation of the Iran-Contra affair in California. He, on his website, as an ex-police officer, he said, well, we looked into the stock trades on 9/11, where people made very strange bets, which clearly showed foreknowledge of the attack. We traced it back, and what did we find? It was all traced back to Buzzy Krongard, who was executive director of the CIA, but also a senior person at Deutsche Bank at the time. That's how we know him. He looks as if he's had his sticky fingers involved in 9/11.
Plus, the latest John Pilger film, The Coming War on China, was on ITV earlier this month. Let's have a listen now to some of the things it revealed about the US surrounding China with military bases.
The world is being primed to regard China as a new enemy. The great power game is called perpetual war.
Our first president, George Washington, said, if you want peace, prepare for war.
Where are we going to stop this process before it starts a war?
The aim of this film is to break a silence, and nuclear war is no longer unthinkable. The equivalent of one Hiroshima bomb was exploded in these islands every day for 12 years.
They're not trying to run the world. They want to keep America from dominating.
We need an enemy for all this money, and China's the perfect enemy.
United States scientists conducted human radiation experiments to study how human beings absorb radiation.
There's really nothing more terrifying than this.
The Chinese, 2,000 years ago, built the Great Wall to keep the barbarians out, not to invade them.
As we look at China on the map, we can see that China is the basic cause of all of our troubles in Asia.
China, they want to dominate a huge chunk of the planet.
It is time to show the whole world that America is back.
I pity a country that would come up against us. We get better and better and better.
So, Martin, is this a reality? Do you think that things could come to blows with China?
It's possible. Especially, but people can miscalculate. Donald Trump has made has appointed somebody who's very hostile to China as his main guy to deal with China. And the Chinese, if they overreact, could we could easily spiral into a conflict just like that.
And I'll put a link up on our show page, thisweek.org.uk, to the website for that film. Finally, Martin, Britain's top military officer has been warning of the threat of a wave of Russian propaganda and spying here in Britain. This is Air Chief Marshal Sir Stuart Peach, Chief of the Defence Staff, said Britain's competitive edge depended on better counter-espionage in the face of Russia's activities.
Well, these people are trying to make work for themselves, like Brigade 77. Nice work if you can get it. Spending all day on the internet debunking so-called Russian propaganda, being paid a great deal of money. But whether they're actually able to engage in a genuine debate about what's really going on, I doubt.
Top spies and civil servants met at the Cabinet Office to discuss the threat 2 months ago. According to a Times source, there was an agreement on the need to do more across Whitehall to understand and assess and formulate options on how to respond to Russia's activities.
Well, what the Russians are trying to do, pursuing their national interests, is to try and get a reputation for transparency and telling the truth. Whereas what the West's trying to do is muddy the waters by talking about Russian lies and Russian problems. RT is not nearly as propagandistic as Fox News. Is Fox News going to be banned? Don't tell Rupert Murdoch.
Time to sign off now for the Murdoch News at 7 o'clock. Coming up, Arabian Nights with Mohammed Makawi. Thanks to Old Ape Oxford economist Martin Summers. Our show page is thisweek.org.uk for your comments. Dialects on Tuesday at noon. I'm on Twitter at Tony Gosling, wishing you a relaxing and enjoyable weekend. Do please join us for the politics show at the same time next week. God bless you in the new year, and don't let the banksters get you down.
BCFM is an award-winning community radio station for Bristol, bringing you national news on the hour, live from the...